it's actually kind of comical in portions of this document where they're demanding, basically shaking down the Europeans for more, and the Canadians for increased military spending. That means, you know, increased money for the U.S. Contractors and stuff. It's just a shakedown. So they, I think that's in the nature of what the imperial power is. And I think this shift towards the Western Hemisphere is just positioning for themselves for confrontation, more direct confrontation with China and Russia down the road.
Well, Mike, what does it mean in your perspective when Washington says it basically wants to reenact the Monroe Doctrine? First of all, what does it mean for Latin America itself? And also, what does it mean for the Europeans? Because there seems to be a definitely clash there from the perspective of the Trump administration towards the Europeans.
Well, the Europeans are totally freaked out by this national security strategy, precisely because of what I said before, which is that this strategy very explicitly says Europe is destroying itself. He doesn't use the word insane, but he's actually demonstrating a insanity in the leadership of the so-called coalition of the willing in Europe, who are hell-bent on continuing the war with Russia. And they even stupidly claim that they could fight the war themselves without the U.S. military backing, and could, in fact, start a war with Russia, which would lead rapidly to global nuclear war, and is a level of insanity which has to be identified. So that's the Europeans. In terms of the Monroe Doctrine, I think it's very important to acknowledge that the original Monroe Doctrine was an anti-colonial, anti-imperial policy. It was not to justify U.S. colonial policy in South America. It was to prevent the then colonial powers in Europe from coming into South America. That, unfortunately, was reversed by what was called the Roosevelt Corollary, referring to Teddy Roosevelt, not FDR, who basically said that, in fact, the U.S. will be militarily involved in South America, and subsequently, as we know, they were. But the original was not that intention. The founding fathers of the United States were not only committed to developing America as a strong industrial democratic power, but were absolutely committed to ending colonial power globally. And they were not able to do that because of changes that took place in the United States and then the ultimate emergence of outright fascism in places in Europe and in Asia. So this is a crisis, but the reality of what's taking place with this national security strategy is hopefully, and this is the way our organization and our associates, should be treating this. We can act to prevent the insanity of a new war in South America. We can stop that. It hasn't happened yet. And we can do that by emphasizing the tremendous positive potential of a U.S.-Russia-Chinese cooperation around development. What should they cooperate on? They should cooperate on developing the Arctic, on developing Africa, on developing Ibero-America. Look what's happened in South America so far. China built the biggest port on the entire Pacific coast, the Chancay port in Peru, and they're talking to Brazil and others about building a bio-oceanic railroad between the Pacific and the Atlantic, from the Chancay port in Peru up to the Atlantic coast in Brazil. Now, these are the kind of policies that the U.S., with sane leadership, would jump at. It would be tremendous to rebuild the U.S. industrial infrastructure, which is in a state of collapse, not quite as bad as that of Europe, but it's heading in that direction with a financial bubble, with the IT bubble and with the cryptocurrency bubbles, which are now ready to blow apart, bringing about a bigger crisis than the 2008 breakdown. Okay. So, you know, these are issues that should be on our table rather than trying to further exemplify that the U.S. cannot be changed and that it's going to go into another round of wars.
What about that, Joe? I mean, I think probably all of us would agree here that that should be on the agenda of the United States, working countries working together. I mean, it really works. But that just that has not been what we have seen from the United States. And now Trump is criticizing, actually, the Europeans and even their crackdown on free speech and political opposition, while at the same time there is crackdown on free speech inside of the United States. So there just seems to be a lot of contradictions in general. I mean, your take on that part of it.
Yeah, well, when people like Trump talk about free speech, they talk about freedom for Nazis to incite violence against minorities. That's what matters to them. They want you to be able to go out on the cameras and say that the immigrants are destroying our country, basically to incite violence against ethnic minorities. They're not going to stick up for the Palestine Action for that. The people are getting arrested in the UK and being called terrorists because they're opposed to genocide in Gaza. They're never going to stick up for that. That's not free speech that they care give a damn about. They just care about the fascists being able to incite against ethnic minorities. So that's all this nonsense about free speech that he mentions in his in the document. And yeah, I noticed that. The United States, from its founding fathers, has been a genocidal state. I mean, that's even, its foundation was based on on genociding. It's writing in the Declaration of Independence that the foreign powers were inciting the original inhabitants, the natives of the United States, against them. So it's always been genocidal. It's from day one. I reject this idea that the founding fathers were some noble figures. I mean, that's just a complete reversal of the truth. So in terms of United States trying to get China and Russia to cooperate, I think this is something dangerous because we've ever seen what kind of cooperation they could get. For example, the China and Russia both abstained on what was basically a genocidal resolution that allowed the United States and Israel to become the with the UN endorsement, become the colonial rulers of Gaza. I mean, and that's just outrageous. So that's the kind of the rest of the world should be opposed to that. If they're going to be cooperating with the United States to help them suppress countries all over the world, then that's something we should.
All right, let me give Mike 30 seconds. Mike, go ahead. Last comments.
Well, again, you know, these simplistic views which try to create a single view of the direction of what's taking place, rather than thinking like a creative human being about what should we push forward as the necessary positive solution. And again, I mean, we have the potential for a U.S.-Russia-China cooperation, joining the BRICS. Why not have everyone recognize that this is a real potential and that Trump and some of the better people around him, rather than the Rubios and the Hegseths, recognize that.
I'm out of time. I'm sorry, I'm out of time. Appreciate both of you being with me, Joe Imsberger out of Canada, Mike Billington out of the U.S. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashmi. Goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Good morning to all listeners from around the world. You are tuned into Iran Radio. It's very nice to have you with us. We start this hour's lineup with our radio productions feature. Dialogue will be next. The program looks at the most important conversation between Shiite imams and their followers, questioners, and leaders of other Islamic faith and sects. That will be followed by Ulema's speech. In this program, we broadcast excerpts from the speeches of well-known and reputable Islamic scholars. Our varied radio productions feature will be our final program this hour.
doesn't matter how old you are. Games are an integral part of human life. Games are one of the most important adventures in our lives because of our desire for excitement and challenge. Many believe that games play an important role in children's understanding of life. But do all games have this advantage? There are more than 100,000 board games in the world. These games only require a few pieces of paper, a couple of dice, and sometimes a table.
Board games give people the opportunity to sit around a table, look at each other face to face, and actually enjoy each other.
In many cafes around the world, people of different ages gather together to play a board game. These board games may not be worthy in case of people's understanding of life, unlike physical games, but they can reveal some secrets of life to us.
I played games with my family growing up. We didn't have a TV, which I know is a shock and horror to the world, but it made us play more, do more things together.
Since then, Walt Disney has become the largest animation producer in the world. And this film company has made a huge profit by making dozens of memorable cartoons. This process continued after Disney's death in 1966, but an important event took place in 1995. While nearly 70 years have passed since the production of Disney's traditional 2D animations, and a year before the animation of The Lion King was able to sell more than $430 million at the box office and receive an Oscar award, a 3D animation challenged Walt Disney's dreams. Toy Story was produced by Pixar and under Steve Jobs' supervision. This animation attracted all the viewers. It must be mentioned that Pixar wasn't a very famous company at that time, so Pixar became a serious competitor for Walt Disney. However, Walt Disney executives decided to be in charge of the release of Toy Story in cinemas exclusively. Walt Disney's partnership with Pixar continued until 2006. The more important thing is that there are no more competitors. Just like Monopoly board game, Walt Disney rolls the dice like a winner in this game. The rest of the players have to continue playing and pay their rent.
Today, the Justice Department's antitrust division approved a huge purchase. Disney is buying up most of 21st Century Fox's assets. This is a $71 billion deal. The decision comes after Disney upped its offer this morning for Fox's movie studio, sports networks, and cable channels.
In Monopoly board game, one player precedes the others and starts to purchase houses and hotels. This process reaches a point that this player's properties become so big. From then on, whenever he rolls the dice, one of the players goes bankrupt. Finally, after a few rounds of the game, everyone is forced to sell his property to the monopolist and say goodbye to the competition. No one has committed a crime, and apparently everything is legal. Throughout the game, everyone competes fairly. The result of the game is the formation of a monopoly. During the Cold War and even after the collapse of the Soviet Union, there was a difference of opinion between the supporters of the socialist and capitalist economy, and they had to deal with this question: which system is better for people? In socialist system, there is no competition between factories, and there is not supposed to be any better one. In this situation, the consumer is always harmed by the low quality of the products. In the capitalist system, competition is the main issue. In this situation, everyone should try hard to produce a better product at a lower price and take over the market. It seems that consumers always win in this market, although this is only the appearance of this economy. But behind the scenes of the capitalist economy, they are the owners of the companies who get the main profit. In capitalism, not everyone is supposed to be the boss, and there are only a few big bosses, and everyone else works for them. When we talk about Japan, we think about technology, audio, and video equipment. We also think about streets with large screens and high-speed internet, and also people who are always busy with their cell phones. But in Japan, apart from IT and high-tech products, other things are also made, which have a history richer than such products. YKK has been producing zippers since 1934. This Japanese company produces more than 7 billion zippers in different types every year and owns almost half of the world market. Zippers may be considered an unimportant commodity for many of us. And it is better to mention another example to understand monopoly better. This example takes us to Milan in Italy. This city is famous for fashion and expensive clothes. Milan reminds us of its two football clubs and the San Siro Stadium. However, Milan is the monopolistic center of sunglasses in the world. Luxottica designs and then retails more than 80% of all sunglasses brands in the world. Luxottica designs all kinds of brands such as Ray-Ban, Oakley, Prada, and Versace. Of course, people around the world do not know the reality and think that each pair of these glasses are made in different countries. However, it may not matter much to the people of the world who makes zippers and sunglasses. But it is definitely important who provides the food we need. Tyson is one of these companies that focuses on the supply and distribution of meat in the United States of America. Approximately 25% of the white and red meat of the United States is sold by this company. Tyson is so big that accusations against it have never reached any results. In 2017, it became known that this company uses a kind of antibiotic in the diet of chickens. In the beginning, this story went viral in social media and news agencies. But after only a few weeks, everything returned to normal and nobody followed the issue anymore. It is not in anyone's interest to fall out with Tyson. In fact, in today's world, apart from well-known tech giants such as Google, Facebook, Microsoft, and Amazon, whose monopolies have been in the headlines for a long time, simpler products such as zippers, glasses, meat, and many other ones are only made by one or more large companies. This is why no one can fall out with them. But monopoly is not seen only in the market of consumer products. This phenomenon occurs behind very obvious events every day in front of the eyes of millions of viewers. The miracle of Camp Nou in 1999 changed many things in the world of football. Until then, many of us had not heard the word comeback. We didn't know the value of the final seconds until Teddy Sheringham and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer scored against Bayern Munich. It was from that moment that the Bavarians realized that they had to change their minds about football. Since that year, Bayern Munich has won 16 of the 21 Bundesliga seasons. This famous football club received these titles like drinking a glass of water. In the 80s and 90s, Germans allowed football stars like Jürgen Klinsmann, Lothar Matthäus and Andreas Brehme to play in foreign football clubs. From 2000 onwards, Bayern Munich did not allow any team to think about recruiting German stars. By spending huge amounts of money in each football season, the CEOs of Bayern Munich chose only the best players of the other teams and did not think about picking and training new talents. It wasn't long before all the teams in Bundesliga were competing for the second place in the table. They knew that with good results, their players would go to Bayern Munich with tempting offers. The CEOs of Bayern Munich believed that you should score so many goals against a weak team that they forget about playing football again. UEFA's financial fair play rules were approved in 2010. One of the main goals of these rules was to prevent monopoly in football. According to this law, clubs do not have the right to spend more money than their income. And this prevents the injection of excessive financial resources or financial doping. However, many critics believe that UEFA's financial fair play not only does not break the monopoly of big football powers, but on the contrary, it is a tool in the hands of the old clubs to stand against the newly emerging and wealthy powers such as Paris Saint-Germain FC and Manchester City FC. These types of events in the world of football happen in Monopoly Board Game 2. In this game, an experienced player plays with some inexperienced children and defeats everyone at the very beginning. Will these children play Monopoly again? When you're working on computer and surfing the net, you may not ask yourself why internet browsers are free. You probably think that free internet browsers show the benevolence and generosity of tech companies and even people like Bill Gates. But behind the scenes of these seemingly simple events, complex actions take place.
Netscape Navigator, software which makes it easy for people to connect the global computer network called the Internet.
Netscape Navigator was the king of web browsers at the time. But there was a downside. You had to pay $49 to install Netscape on your computer.
In one of the most important antitrust law cases of 1996 in America, Microsoft, the information technology giant, was accused of providing Internet Explorer for free. Because apparently by doing a customer-oriented action, Microsoft had removed its smaller but more successful competitor, Netscape, from the competition scene.
The DOJ argued that Microsoft stifled competition by using its sheer size to barge into the browser wars. It could offer Internet Explorer for free, included in the OS, and Netscape would be cut out of the business from the very first time the computer was turned on. On top of that, if a person wanted to install Netscape on the computer, Microsoft allegedly made it incredibly difficult to do so. Microsoft, on the other hand, argued that people chose to use its operating system because it was simply better than the competition.
This monopolistic action of Microsoft showed how complicated and deceptive the behavior of huge companies can be in destroying competitors. Chance is one of the two types of card drawing spaces in Monopoly. If you enter the space, you pick one chance card and follow the order. Receiving money from the bank or paying a fine to the bank or anything else are written on the chance cards. In the game, the type of card chosen is completely random. But in the real world, random selection is not attractive because company managers do not like to be surprised. They prefer to advance their work in any way by helping their government financially or by doing humanitarian work. In the summer of 2020, the CEOs of the four American tech giants were summoned to the congressional hearing for the umpteenth time. Jeff Bezos, executive chairman of Amazon, Sundar Pichai, the CEO of Google, Mark Zuckerberg, chief executive officer of Facebook, and Tim Cook, chief executive officer of Apple. They were supposed to answer the questions of the U.S. congressman about eliminating small competitors and creating a monopoly. This meeting was held virtually due to COVID-19 pandemic and lasted about 5 hours. But this meeting was fruitless. The CEOs of these companies talked about their hard lives in childhood and youth, and then talked about their contribution to the economic prosperity of the United States of America.
The products we build have changed the world and improved people's lives. Our industry is one of the ways that America shares its values with the world and one of our greatest economic and cultural exports. Facebook is part of this story. We started with an idea to give people the power to share and connect. And we've built services that billions of people find useful. I'm proud that we've given people who've never had a voice before the opportunity to be heard.
Tim Cook claimed that Apple's App Store alone contributed $138 billion to the U.S. market. Mark Zuckerberg talked about the help of Facebook in connecting the people of the world to each other. And when he was asked why he also bought Instagram in 2012, he said, "I never thought that this social networking system would become popular at that time." Finally, the CEOs of these four companies, whose capital is $5 trillion in total, finished the congressional hearing and nothing special happened, just like the previous meetings. Sundar Pichai still owns the world with Android. Jeff Bezos still destroys his competitors with online retail. Mark Zuckerberg still controls the world's communications with Facebook, WhatsApp, and Instagram. Tim Cook does not allow any competitor to get close to Apple products. These tech giants are so much big that no one can compete with them. These small companies are like the poor bankers in Monopoly board game that can't compete with powerful players. The banker is probably company's cooperator in this game.
I'm a traveler, just as they were,
walking
the world, thinking of the past, on an earth so vast,
waiting
to return.
just to know you, whoever you are. Laugh with you, learn from you, open to you my heart. But soon when I say goodbye and move on, I'm a traveler just as they were, walking the world, thinking of the past on an earth so vast, waiting to return. Kind of neighbor who prays for you and me.
The kind of neighbor who prays for you and me.
There for you, a shoulder to turn to. I'm a traveler just as they were, walking the world, thinking of the past on an earth so vast, waiting to return, waiting to return. To know you, I've learned so much.
Been a pleasure to know you, I've learned so much.
Pray for you, hope to meet you, my heart you have touched.
Pray for you, hope to meet you, my heart you have touched.
Remember me, so I might be with you. I'm a traveler, just as they were,
walking
the world, thinking of the past on an earth so vast,
waiting
to return, waiting to return, waiting to return, return to my
We have to have a very fair assessment of this academic and intellectual icon of early Islam.
His impact is more pronounced in jurisprudence that he formalized.
And tens of thousands of statements and teachings have reached us from Al-Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam.
This is Dialogue, an introduction to the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program is Dialogue and I'm your host Mahdi. Today we want to talk about one of the great personalities in the history of Islam, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. Please stay tuned. The sixth divinely appointed Imam, Imam Jafar al-Sadiq alayhi salam, was an incredibly prominent character in the history of the Muslims. He benefited humankind with his highly scientific achievements, many of which had never been seen before by humanity. Imam Jafar Sadiq alayhi salam's instructions in the acts of worship and transactions and his contribution in the field of legislation were amazing achievements that had not occurred before amongst the Muslim masses. And His Eminence also had a positive and active share in the establishment of human culture and civilization. The sixth divinely appointed Imam, the son of Imam Baqir alayhi salam, an individual who was divinely appointed by the Almighty Allah, was known to have improved the general public lives of the people and the Muslims, and he was an individual, a divinely appointed Imam, a man from the household of the Holy Prophet, who enhanced human thoughts and discovered many of the secrets of this universe. Welcome back, dear listeners. This is IRIB English Radio, and we're talking about the dialogues of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. So what an honor it is to be speaking about the dialogues of the sixth divinely appointed Imam, Imam Jafar Sadiq alayhi salam. Now, just for a few programs, we would humbly speak about the dialogues of the various different famous people in the era of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, and how in their dialogues, they spoke about the excellencies and the superiority of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. So, of course, many of you probably know Jabir ibn Hayyan, of course, one of the fathers of chemistry, if I'm not mistaken, where even in the present day, it was Jabir ibn Hayyan's work that has led to modern era chemistry and its advancements. And, of course, Jabir ibn Hayyan was a famous student of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. So somebody once asked him that, you know, you are such an expert in this science and, you know, you have all this knowledge about this science, you know, isn't that so wonderful and great? And so Jabir ibn Hayyan, he replies and he says that, you know, really I have nothing and whatever I have, it is from Imam Jafar Sadiq alayhi salam. He says, Jafar ibn Muhammad alayhi salam is one of the masters in jurisprudence, knowledge, science, and excellence from the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam. So, of course, he says one of the masters because he's also referring to Imam Baqir alayhi salam, Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, and so forth. So, this is what Jabir ibn Hayyan, you know, says about Imam Jafar Sadiq alayhi salam, and really this is a testament, you know, when the students of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam are at such a amazing level of knowledge and mastery to the point where thousands of years later, you know, it was their foundations that have helped to develop modern era sciences. I mean, this is something that is really amazing. It's not something that one can just lightly say and look over and not reflect upon. And this individual who has such a, you know, solid position when it comes to the modern era sciences, he is saying that I'm a humble student of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. He is saying that the real master in not just one science, but in all these sciences, in knowledge and in excellence, is Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. It is really something to take note of. And we should also put forth these things about the divinely appointed Imams and not hide them. Try our best to show the world these beautiful divine personalities, which of course will help to cure and heal and save the world that we are living in. This is Dialogue, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. IRI IRIB English Radio. Our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir. And now let's listen to Sayyid Muhammad Jawad Al-Ghazwini.
Another beautiful teaching from Al-Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salam is the following hadith. Implementing this hadith gives you peace of mind, my dear brothers and sisters. It brings you rahat al-qalb. It removes stress from your life. The Imam alayhi salam states, Ar-raghbatu fi dunya turithu al-ghamma wal-huzn. والزهد في الدنيا راحة القلب والبدن. The Imam says, having expectations from this worldly dunya, from materialism, always pursuing this dunya, wanting this dunya, wanting money, wanting power, wanting this position, wanting attention, competition for attention. The Imam says, this leads to sadness, to depression, to grief. Because you can never get enough of this dunya. We always have expectations. A true mu'min, a successful couple, a successful human being is the one who does not have any expectation. If my spouse serves me, I don't take it for granted. I thank them from the bottom of my heart. I appreciate it. Because when you expect something and the person gives it to you, right? You don't genuinely thank them. Why don't you genuinely thank them? Because in your mind, غصباً عنك, I expect this, I deserve this. So if you served me, you did something to me, it's your job to do so. That's the attitude. And that's why you cannot even be thankful. And I've seen this, wallahi, I've seen this with a lot of married couples, right? Sometimes one side really goes out of their way to serve the other side. The other side is not still not really happy. And when you dig deeper to see what's going on, yeah, it's her obligation. It's his obligation. They're just doing their job. You ruin your marriage with this type of attitude. Don't have any expectations. Not having expectations puts you at peace. At night you sleep, you have no grudges against anyone. Because you don't expect anything from anyone. Your expectation is only from Allah. Not everyone, not anyone out there in society. The Imam says this brings you peace of mind and it gives you health. It's good for your body as well. So this is truly a beautiful, amazing hadith that we learn from Al-Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the program, Dialogue. For more information, visit our website at iranradio.ir. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
علم فقه از علوم شریفه اسلامی است.
فقه or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked among
پیغمبر اکرم نمونه.
The holy prophet of Islam is the example
عمده عمل انسان بعد از ایمان.
Self purification is the most significant
factor. امامت یک اصل زنده است در تاریخ اسلام.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. We welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qaraati. Please stay tuned.
بنابراین شب شکرگزاریه. شکرش هم اینه که لاغر شب قدر.
The night of Qadr is the night of gratitude. The way to give thanks is that, at the very least, on the night of Qadr, the main body of our activities in mosques should revolve around the Quran. We recite supplications. On the night of Qadr, we recite the supplication of Al-Ghawth, Al-Ghawth, it means help, oh help. Well, eulogies, mourning ceremonies, and speeches are very good, but the Quran's share is not given. It's as if the bank of the night of Qadr is a Quranic night.
قرآن شب قدر نازل شده. خب شب قدر پس باید سهم خودش هم بدیم. یعنی نیمی از بحثا رو باید تبدیل کنیم به قرآن.
The Quran was revealed on the night of Qadr. So on this night we must also give its due share. This means that half of the programs should be dedicated to the Quran. Ayahs should be selected that at that time are more of a remedy for pains and answers to people's questions. This question, its answer is this. Because the Quran is light, the people are always in darkness, and sometimes they get confused, become bewildered, don't know who is telling the truth, who is lying, how to deal with their spouse, get stuck in raising their child, get stuck in their livelihood. We are always getting stuck and don't know what to do, or we make decisions and later regret them. Give primacy to the Quran, please. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qaraati. To find out more about this program and our other programs, please log on to our website, iranradio.ir. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye. Thank you.
They say that love strikes only once. That precious moment I offer you. Where is the rising sun? Where is the spring of hope? Where is the shining moon? Where is the firmest road? You are my guiding light that walks me through the night. Your presence gives me strength, gives vision to my sight. Someday faith will increase, someday our wars will cease. Someday there'll be justice, someday there will be. Everything I possess, I offer you. I wanna be someone whom you can trust. Come save us from a world that's so unjust. Where is the rising sun? Where is the spring of hope? Where is the shining?
They say that a barking dog doesn't bite. But Mr. Donald Trump, if I may use the metaphor, has been barking at Mexico for quite some time. Could we be on the verge of witnessing military invasion of Mexico by the Americans? So buckle up, because this is today's journey on Gringo.
Secretary of State saying that we're very close to a deal in the Middle East.
We've been talking about this puppet of course, that we won the First World War, we won the Second World War.
Is he a Mexican-American that is offended by...
I have as a guest the foreign media correspondent here in Mexico, Raul Torres, whom I warmly welcome. Raul, it's such a pleasure to see you again and to have you here on Gringo. And we have a satellite connection here with Samuel Cruz Trujillo, a historian and analyst with an excellent YouTube channel, author of several books, and also a Mexican who lives in La Paz, Bolivia, to ask him about this topic. I'm really glad to have you back here at Gringo. Raul, regarding Claudia Sheinbaum, it's quite unique because with Trump, it seemed like he and Andres Manuel López Obrador had a mutual understanding. However, with Claudia Sheinbaum on one hand, he praises her personally. He says she is intelligent and all these good words. But on the other hand, Mexico is still struggling. There is a double standard at play, you know. The president of Mexico, Claudia Sheinbaum, has mentioned several times, well, there is the national anthem, a soldier in every son you gave. A soldier, you see, we're talking about a narrative, a use of language.
Narrativa, un uso del lenguaje.
Da la impresión de que el presidente Trump...
Well, to me, it's like President Trump speaks to the president, probably with his head turned to the left or to his left side. But then when he talks about her, he speaks with his right hand. I mention this because he has indeed expressed positive remarks about her. Yet he concludes by saying, she can't, she's even afraid. However, he has gone further. As you may recall that just a few weeks ago, there was a report of a warship sailing very close to Ensenada, in international waters, but near Ensenada. Weeks later, it was reported that a surveillance plane from the United States was circling over Mexican territory, specifically in the northern part of the country. In addition, during the attacks carried out near Venezuela, we have witnessed how the narco boats are targeted and destroyed, resulting in the loss of lives.
Without any proof whatsoever that they are drug traffickers, nothing.
And without the basic right for these individuals to defend themselves. Well, there was also a case where even the Mexican Navy took part in the search for lone survivor of U.S. strikes on alleged drug boats.
Euphemistically called a castaway. Well, a castaway, but after an attack.
Of course. It wasn't in Mexican waters, but rather in international waters, close to Mexican waters. The Mexican government assisted in the search for this individual, this possible survivor, who was not found. So President Trump makes these statements. But then he pressures the Mexican government to take certain actions, even though the president asserts that we are sovereign, which we are, despite her claims that she governs independently of President Trump's pressure. However, in February and then in August, she handed over a total of 56 drug traffickers, who were indeed drug traffickers and criminals, but were undergoing legal proceedings and some still had time to appeal, to seek to avoid extradition. The Mexican government essentially decides to exile them, citing a security law. So it ends like this, bending the government, making President Sheinbaum take decisions and actions that she probably wouldn't take at another time or under different circumstances. If we talk about a matter of sovereignty, she shouldn't have to do it, yet she does.
Well, you've experienced Trump's first term and you were quite active here in Mexico. What differences do you see between that first term of Trump, moving through Biden, and now in the second term of Donald Trump?